Welcome to Career Solutions with David Rawls, your guide to improving the quality of your career. David will share tips for career success, faith-based tips for locating, landing jobs, and succeeding at your work. Join your host, David Rawls, who brings more than 30 years' experience working for GTE and Disney, as he helps you with your career solutions.
Our subject today is big, as I mentioned. It's about that employer-employee relationship. Today we're going to be talking about trust. Today in our in corporate America, in the workaday world here in our country, we're dealing with trust in the workplace, or should I say the lack of trust or the deterioration of trust. One highly experienced leader, author, and speaker who knows that trust is the key to organizational success is a man that's been tested under fire, and I want to introduce him to you right now. Dr. Mike Armour is the founder and principal of Strategic Leadership Development International. It's a Dallas-based firm that helps leaders maximize their effectiveness. He's a coach, a mentor, a consultant. At 33, Dr. Mike founded a highly successful private school. 3 years later, he was a university dean. By 37, he was one of America's youngest college presidents, and he's also devoted 35 years to the Naval Reserve, recently retiring as a captain. Mike has been the go-to man for organizations needing turnaround and needing to get back on track. For over a decade, he's been a resource specialist for educators in Russia and the Ukraine who are bringing ethics and character training into their schools and universities. He now heads a humanitarian organization that assists hospitals and clinics in these same countries. So he's not only a taker, he's a giver. He gives back a lot of himself, not only to the individuals, but organizations and countries that he's working with. Holds a PhD from UCLA, one of my favorite universities west of the Mississippi. He's done graduate work in strategy, leadership at the United States Naval War College. He regularly addresses major audiences across the United States and around the world on leadership, personal development, and building trust within organizations. Wow, that is a mouthful to introduce our guest today, my new friend, Dr. Mike Armour. Mike, so glad to have you with us.
It is a privilege to be with you, and mine, what an introduction you've given me.
Well, you've just accomplished so much. I mean, if I wanted to tell everybody everything you've done, it would be a nice a biography about you, but we wouldn't get a chance to speak with you at all on the hour show that we have. You've study trust or the lack thereof and the impacts on organizations from both a leader's perspective as well as that of the troops. Mm-hmm. It seems that trust is vanishing, dare I say, in most organizations in our society. Here's a two-part question for you, Dr. Mike. What is trust and what factors are undermining it?
The way that I define trust most commonly is that trust is complete confidence that a person or organization will consistently do what is right in every situation.
Wow.
And I use that word right with a purposeful ambiguity. It means right in terms of what is ethically right, mm-hmm. but right in terms of what is the appropriate response for the challenge in front of us, what is the appropriate decision given the factors before us. So it is both a measure of character and a measure of performance.
Okay. And so what are some of the things that you see around us here, particularly in the United States, undermining trust?
Well, I think it begins in the broad society in light of the fact that we are probably more polarized on more issues as a nation right now than we've ever been in our history. Our politics has always been polarized, but historically it was polarized around a single issue. The gold standard, this or that war, slavery. But today, across the board, we seem to be polarized as a society, and when we focus on our polarization, it does very little to build up trust in those on the other side.
Right.
We then bring that sort of general aura of distrust to the business place. And in the business place, mergers and acquisitions have been running at such a pace in recent years that very few people have real confidence that their company is going to stick through with them through thick and thin.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, trust in the organization is in decline.
You know, as an HR executive back in the early 90s, I began to see some of the early effects of that, and it just continued to swell since that time. Stay with us now as we go into a break. We'll be right back with Dr. Mike Armour. Mike, your most recent book, Leadership and the Power of Trust, just came out, I guess, last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Right at the end of the year, yeah.
2007, asserts the premise that organizations to succeed long-term, trust, indeed a deep trust, is an absolute imperative. It's a must. Expand on that, if you would, for just a second.
Well, one of the things that's absolutely essential in today's hyper-competitive and global marketplace is that companies be fast, nimble, responsive. And when distrust is running within an organization, it bogs down all three of those processes.
Right.
Communication becomes closed, people become protective of turf and self, and as a result, fast responsiveness, the ability to change direction on a dime, the ability to innovate fast enough to stay ahead of the pack, is a lost art before long, and you find your competitive edge getting away from you.
Yeah. Now, you talk about a formula in your book, and I believe you refer to it as the Serve You formula. Mm-hmm. That's an acronym, an acrostic. I don't even know, sure what the right word is. S-I-R-V-U. Each of those standing for a – let's see how many of those we can get through quickly.
Okay.
First off, what is the formula for? What is the Serve You formula for?
Well, I built the book around two formulas. One, the kind of atmosphere that leaders must create within any organization in order to give trust the soil in which to flourish.
Okay.
And the other is the characteristics that leaders themselves must manifest in order for people to feel comfortable about investing their trust in that leader.
Gotcha.
So the first thing we start with is the atmosphere, the culture, and that's where I came up with the Serve You formula.
Okay, and the S stands for safe.
Right.
People need to feel safe, right?
As I began to talk to people who were voicing their sense of distrust in the organization over the years, I began to listen to what it was they did not feel. And the first one that comes to the fore is they didn't feel safe, psychologically safe or emotionally safe or safe in terms of the security of their position. And if you stop and think about it, safety and faith are sort of two sides of are opposite sides of an issue. To the degree that I don't feel safe, I'm not going to put faith in what's in front of me. I'm not going to trust what's in front of me.
Right.
And so to the degree that people don't feel safe, they are to that degree not trusting the leadership, the organization, or the general setting. So, first of all, people have to feel safe. Secondly, they have to feel informed. And the reason this is important is that we are driven as human beings to make sense of what happens. And when we don't have information, we have to begin to speculate about what's going on. The interesting thing is we are wired to speculate in ways that add to distrust. That is, I've never had anyone in a company say, "You know, the executive team has been meeting behind closed doors 2 hours every day this week. I bet something really good is about to happen here."
Right.
You know, we always speculate that something really unfortunate or undesirable is on the horizon. And that then raises anxiety and fear, which are, again, are opposites of trust. So we've got to keep people feeling informed if we're going to disarm the speculation that will work to undermine trust.
Mm-hmm.
Then they have to feel respected, and part of keeping them informed is treating them with respect. If someone isn't interested in keeping me informed, I really don't feel that they respect me or my contribution all that much, which then leads us to the V in the formula. We need to feel valued. We need to feel that what we're contributing is recognized and valued within the organization, and particularly by those leaders that we work with most closely. And then finally, people need to feel understood. I find that individuals don't need to have every decision go their way. They don't need management to make every decision just as they would have recommended it be done. But they want to be heard in the process of reaching critical decisions and feel that their views were not only heard, but understood and taken into consideration in whatever is finally decided.
Mm-hmm. Okay, as you go through each of these 5 points, are there certain activities, behaviors, events, trends that you see are actually eroding? I think of the fact that bosses that might continually threaten people with their jobs obviously create an unsafe work environment. They show a lack of respect. They show lack of valuing. Clearly, people then information gets withheld, so now they feel like they're uninformed and they begin to speculate all kinds of things. What other things might immediately cause people to feel this lack of trust as a result of this serve you formula?
Well, other things
going on in the workaday world today.
Right. Well, there are a number of things that I look for when I'm doing a trust assessment within an organization to see if they are present, because to the degree they are present, trust is taking a bit of a bruising. Backbiting and backstabbing are one of them.
Right.
Angry outbursts, not just from managers, but from peers, can add to the distrust. Abusive language, racist and sexist humor, hostile gestures, bullying, those kinds of things are at work. People who talk about one another behind their back, because the question is raised then, what are they saying behind my back?
Right.
Do I really trust them with information that might be used against me?
How about all those corporations, and you and I remember them, we've both been around long enough to remember those corporations. I know it doesn't seem like too long to us. There aren't that many years ago, perhaps in the back in the early 80s, there were a lot of corporations that could boast they had never had a layoff. But it seems like through the 80s, 90s, and now into the new millennium, we sort of ebb and flow with all these massive restructurings, mergers, and acquisitions. The corporation that I spent 26 years with doesn't exist anymore. It was merged into non-existence. And it was one of the Fortune 25 companies, a huge company absorbed by another, and a lot of tens of thousands of people lost their job. That creates a lot of distrust too, doesn't it?
Well, of course. And one of the things that you find if you work with around consultants who help companies pull off mergers and acquisitions is that they typically tell the acquiring company, you need to make your key personnel decisions and get your layoffs made in the first 30 days. Well, if you take that formula, then that means that what the acquiring company is doing is creating some kind of spreadsheet and plugging people into it and saying, oh, we have redundancy here, we have redundancy there.
Yep.
This person goes, that person goes.
Yep.
As a result, the worker really never has a chance to prove himself or herself to the new management.
Mm-hmm.
They simply end up at the wrong place on the spreadsheet, and they're on the street.
Right.
So what I'm finding is happening is that even in companies that are fairly stable and don't seem to have someone just outside the door wanting to acquire them, workers inside have this ongoing anxiety that that person appearing at the door to buy may show up at any time. And though I trust my present management, I'm not sure I can trust whatever management will replace them. So they don't invest themselves in the company with the full engagement that we knew back in that era when these companies could make the kind of boast you spoke of.
Well, I mean, I know of companies whose senior management I'm familiar with, and the senior managers, sometimes the owners, if it's a privately held company, they announce the company is up for sale, and it may be up for sale for 2 or 3 years. What does that do for trust? What does that do to some level of safety and comfortability and feeling informed over the course of that 2-3 years? That, I mean, once you make that kind of an announcement, I would think it doesn't make any difference even if you take the company off the market. That's got to be lingering out in the back of everybody's minds day after day.
What it becomes is a nagging anxiety.
Yeah.
Fear and anxiety are very similar to one another, but they also have some behavioral differences when it comes to how we respond to them. In fear, I tend to know where the threat is coming from, how large the threat is, and so I can size up my options and decide what action I may take. In anxiety, I feel threatened, but I'm not sure what the threat is. I'm not sure of its magnitude. I'm not sure exactly what direction it's coming from.
Yep.
So I pull into myself in a defensive posture, having no idea how to take proactive action.
Right.
And as a result, anxiety can be just as debilitating on trust as fear.
That's right.
Got a question for David or his guest? Call now, toll free, 877-232-4855.
Well, hi, I'm David Rawls. Glad you're back. This is Career Solutions. I'm with my guest today, Dr. Mike Armour, who's with us. He and I are discussing this disease, which is slowly killing some organizations, and I've seen it put some right under the lack of trust between leaders and those that they're trying to lead. Dr. Mike, tell me about your high trust formula for building trust. The high trust, again, an acronym, HITRUST. Each of those letters stands for something. Tell me about that formula and what that's all about.
Well, these are the behaviors that I've seen are characteristic of leaders who consistently create high trust organizations and cultures around them.
Okay.
And the H is for humility, which is perhaps one of the most overlooked words in all of leadership literature. Very little in the books on leadership on the importance of humility. But the fact of the matter is, we do not trust arrogant, self-serving people. And so humility needs to be at the top of the list.
We trust the people who wash our feet, don't we?
Well, that's true. And it's interesting that if you do a web search on humility and leadership, there's so little on it that most of what comes up is discussions of leadership principles drawn from the teachings of Jesus or discussions of Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, where he celebrates the humility of the great leaders he saw. But there is very little else that has been written on this subject in the leadership literature.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So we move from humility then to the second letter in the formula. The I is for integrity, which everyone recognizes is critical for trust. And closely related to that is truthfulness, being a person whose word means exactly what is being said. There's no hidden agenda, no spin. We're straightforward and truthful. The R stands for responsiveness, responding to people's requests, making decisions in a timely way, answering emails or voicemails, being someone that people know they can rely on when they need help. Then the U stands for unblemished fair play. We are born with a sense that fair play ought to prevail. Little kids early in life start telling us, Dad, Mom, it's not fair. It's not fair. We never lose that drive. And so a leader who's going to be trusted cannot play favorites or be making decisions that look as though there is some criteria other than absolute fairness driving the way that this company is run and organized.
And I'll tell you what, that is a I mean, being a leader in a major corporation, I'll tell you from my own experience, that's a tough one.
Oh, it is.
You're trying to recognize performance.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to make a distinction between those that are high performers versus those that are not. And at the same time, you're trying to show an unblemished fair play. And that's a tricky one to walk.
And part of the problem is that many times as leaders, we have confidential information about an employee or a direct report that influences the way we respond to their situation as opposed to other situations. And to the observer not having that information, it looks like we're playing favorites or we are not not maintaining this fairness.
Yeah.
When in reality, what we have to do is to have the self-confidence and the humility and the integrity to stick with what we know is right, even though at times we may be accused wrongly of not being fair.
Yep. Okay, let's move into the S on high trust.
Okay. It means that stands for support and encouragement. We are in a world where people talk about delegating, but often what they do is dump instead of delegating. They just hand a job to someone without giving them the essential support and encouragement they need to get things done. And when people have been dumped on, they don't tend to continue trusting the leadership that's done it to them.
Right.
And finally, closely related to that is the T for team care. Great leaders build great teams, and they must be known as those who really care for their people. In fact, one management group has done a study of hundreds of industries asking people, what are the criteria you use in determining which leaders you trust? And across about 100 different industries, the most common response was someone who really cares for me. And so we cannot downplay the importance of a leader demonstrating care for each individual as well as the team.
Yeah, good. Hey, I'll tell you what, Dr. Mike, we've got a caller.
Okay.
And we have Larry calling from Euless. Let's bring Larry on the line. Larry, you're here with David Rawls and Dr. Mike Armour. You have a question?
Yes, I do. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And I might just direct the question to both of you, but if there is distrust between you and your manager, something has happened or there's something you don't feel quite right about, obviously how things are approached are really important. What would be the advice that you would give an employee to approach your manager and talk about the subject?
Great, great question, Larry. Dr. Mike, I'll let you start with that.
One of the things I would want to know is whether or not the distrust that is running is as a result of the manager not being forthright in his or her communication, so that you have to be very guarded about what you say to them. Ultimately, we never overcome distrust in a relationship without some kind of dialogue. And if this is a manager who's not open to you coming to him or her with your expression of concern, then your options are pretty limited. It may almost entail waiting this manager out and hoping that something happens better. But if the person really is open to input and feedback from those who report to him or her as a leader or manager, then I think it's a matter of finding a way to frame a conversation in which you say, this is what I observed, and perhaps I put the wrong interpretation on it, but let me tell you how this made me feel. Now, see, we're coming back to the feel formula. When this occurred, I ended up feeling this way, and quite honestly, it has hampered the depth of trust I want to have in this organization. Could we talk about that? And so we come at it in a non-judgmental, non-accusative way, and give them an opportunity then to hear, perhaps learn from your feedback, and begin a dialogue that can move toward healing.
Great.
Hope that helps.
It does. Thank you very much.
Mike, let's as we think about trust, as we're getting ready to run out of time here in this next segment of our show, what's the prognosis for the future? I mean, are American corporations doomed? Are we in a downward spiral? What do you see happening? Be a pundit for a moment. Tell us where we're going.
Well, the trends have not been good for a long while, and when we find ourselves in economic times of stress and distress, as we are now, the worst in personal and corporate behavior tends to come out instead of the best. So we may continue to be in a downward spiral, but I tell you, one of the things that has encouraged me since this book has been out and been on the web is the number of corporations I'm talking to who are coming to grips with the fact that this is a real issue, not just in terms of morale, but in terms of bottom-line survivability, and are looking for ways to address it and looking for resources to do so.
I think once leaders recognize the financial impacts of that, the ongoing strategic impacts for that, the only thing that concerns me and your quick comment about this, the thing that concerns me is I hear that the average CEO's tenure is now down to about 3.5 years. So many of them are making, with their golden parachutes, they're making decisions that are very short term. They're making decisions to feather their own nests, and all that does is create more distrust. So I mean, that's a tough one to wrestle to the ground.
And part of the compounding factor on that one is the CEO feels answerable to the board to keep Wall Street happy.
Yep.
And Wall Street looks at near-term, short-term results, not long-term investments. And the things that make for near-term results are often the very things that are most in antithesis to a trust-building culture.
Yep, that's right. Isn't that funny how all this is being driven? Mike, you mentioned in your book, trust is the number one competitive advantage today.
Mm-hmm.
The number one competitive advantage. So are there any things out there that perhaps companies are thinking are their advantage that they need to put in the back seat so that trust can move up to the front seat and be number one? Any things right now crowding trust out of the thinking of executives today other than Wall Street?
Well, people tend to think that speed and innovation are the keys. And some of my comments at the top of the hour suggest that I agree with that, that we've got to be quick, nimble, and innovative to succeed. But what companies don't realize is that the trust within the organization is going to determine whether or not they can be quick, nimble, and innovative.
Amen.
And I'm working right now quietly behind the scenes with one Fortune 25 company that, having recognized this, is actually looking at how to build trust building into their strategic plan, because they realize that they're losing their innovative edge because of distrust
Amen.
In the organization.
Amen. Well, remember now that you can, you listeners out there can hear us streaming live on KVTT.org. Stay tuned for more from Career Solutions after these messages from some of our ministry partners. Stay with us. Welcome back to Career Solutions. This is a program dedicated to helping you with your career challenges, from job search all the way to job security. We talk about different career issues every single week. We're with Dr. Mike Armour, who's the author of Leadership and the Power of Trust. Mike, I know you said we could get that book. I'm going to mention our website if our listeners want to write this down. I'd like to get a copy. I want to commend it to you. I've been just blessed by reading the book from cover to cover. It's called Leadership and the Power of Trust. You may get this book from Amazon if you want to spend $17.99. Or if you'd like to go into Mike's website, you can save some money and get it for $14.99. The URL for his website is trustispower.com. Let me read that one more time. trustispower.com. For $14.99, you can pick up Mike's book, Leadership and the Power of Trust. If you're in leadership or an aspiring leader, I want to strongly recommend that you get a copy of Mike's book. Mike, thanks so much for being my guest today. I really appreciate you and appreciate the work you're doing.
It has been a privilege to be with you.
I hope you'll come back again. I'd love to talk with you about some of the efforts that you've got going on over in Eastern Europe. So let's make a date to get back together sometime next year if we could.
Let's do it.